Tonight's speaker, Bob Reed, got his medical degree at the university where he's now located, Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario. He got his medical degree there and did a residency in obstetrics and gynecology, and then went to San Diego to finish a fellowship in reproductive endocrinology and infertility. He then came back to Queens and has been there ever since. He's distinguished himself as the past president of the Canadian Society for Fertility and Andrology, and also president of the Society of Obstetricians and Gynecologists of Canada. In 1988, on behalf of the Society of Obstetrics and Gynecology of Canada, he chaired the first Canadian report entitled Ethical Considerations of the New Reproductive Technologies. And between 2000 and 2004, he chaired the Society's Contraceptives Awareness Program on Sexual Reproductive Health. And that's what led to his project. It's a website, actually, www.sexualityandyou.canada, which received a prestigious World Summit Award from the UN for being among the top five e-health sites in 2005. And his talk tonight is entitled Doctors Without Borders, Sexual and Reproductive Health in the Electronic Era. Bob?
Thanks very much, James. I really feel honored to have this opportunity to come and speak to you this evening. I've chosen this title not because I'm a participant in what you know as Doctors Without Borders, but because it reflects an emerging technology that allows us to spread our reach much further. I just want to say a couple of words about this gentleman, who you've heard about already. Percy was involved with Janssen Ortho in my formative years in the 80s and was always very supportive of educational programs. We could pick up the phone and call him and say, look, we need some money to run some form of educational program, and he was always there to support it. So it's a special honor for me to do this lecture, Percy. Now, usually when I talk about museums and histories of things, there's a lot of gray hair in the audience, and I'm delighted to see a number of younger people. So I have a little story for the younger people, and then we'll carry on with the presentation. This is apparently a true story that a fellow was in a restaurant with his buddy in either London or Paris, and they look over and they see Bono sitting at a table with another gentleman, and they really wanted to get a picture taken with him, you know, the lead singer of U2. And so he got up to go to the washroom, and they ran over to the other guy at the table and said, look, we don't know what the etiquette of this is. We don't want to interrupt Bono, you know, in his meal, but would you just ask him if we could have a picture taken? So they go back to their table. Bono comes back. He eats his dinner, and at the end of dinner, they see him waving him over. So they come over, and they get their picture taken, holding Bono's hands and shaking, you know, and he signs a couple of menus for them, and they leave, and they go back to their table. They're just thrilled that they met Bono and got his autograph. And the waiter comes to bring the bill at the end of the night, and the guy says, your dinner's all paid for. And they said, did Bono pay for it? And they said, no, his companion, Bruce Springsteen, did. You have to think about that for a minute. But Bruce wanted to know who he was, I think. So Doctors Without Borders, as you probably well know, is an independent humanitarian medical aid agency committed to two objectives: providing medical aid wherever it's needed, regardless of race, religion, politics, often in war zones, and raising the awareness of the plight of people that they can help. And that's not what I'm going to talk about tonight, so I don't want to discredit them in any way or imply that this has anything to do with that organization. Sexual health is a universal need. It starts out with curiosity. Often there's a bit of interest generated as we get older. And then we get very enthusiastic at a certain point in our life. And then there's a lot of exploration. So this is a natural human process and a natural human need. And the reason I titled this Doctors Without Borders is we have a very unique capability nowadays to access the Internet, send messages across the world to any place where they have access to the Internet, and deliver educational materials that can improve quality of life for people where that kind of information is often suppressed or just not available. Now, the question is the political climate any more conducive to addressing this problem than it was a century and a half ago? This is an article from the Canadian Medical Association Journal in 1980, and it's looking back 25 years, so it's looking back to 1955. And it says, a few redneck parents and school board officials are stifling attempts to reach school children with a comprehensive sex education program. We, the physicians of Canada, must assume a major share of the responsibility for the future to control unplanned pregnancies in this country. So I ask you, how far have we progressed since 1955? This is a New York Times article, 2006, May 2006. Picture of a condom, and it says, the war on contraception, if properly used, this latex condom, or for that matter, any other form of birth control pill, especially the morning after pill, will anger a great many people. People who believe that having sex without the intent to procreate is a very, very bad thing. Any contraceptive highly effective against pregnancy, that is, unwanted pregnancy, is precisely the problem, even though there might be fewer abortions if we were using these more often. So the political controversy carries on, and it is a real challenge to deal with this. Now, I pulled out some data for a presentation in Canada on Canadian teens, and I imagine it's not much different in the United States. Well, this is looking at sexual activity, and you can see in the area that's highlighted there, by the age of 17, 45% of kids have had sexual activity. If you look at the method of contraception employed by both of them, it's withdrawal or nothing. So you can see substantial percentages are not using reliable means of contraception. If you look at unplanned pregnancy, and the data is very similar for the United States, 50% of all pregnancies occurring in North America are unplanned. What's the outcome of unplanned pregnancy? I mean, we don't really know how many unplanned pregnancies there are because information on abortions and miscarriages are not accurate to a great extent. But probably 15 to 20% will miscarry. It's estimated about a third will terminate their pregnancy, and the remainder either keep children and end up as being child parents, you're going to high schools with their kids, or give the children up for adoption, and they do that less and less. So adoption, I have an infertility practice, and it's very hard to get adopted babies. If you look at the numbers of terminations in the U.S., last year it was 1.4 million. In Canada it was about 100,000, 106,000. And as physicians, obstetricians and family physicians, we're the interface for all these people that walk in the office saying, geez, the pregnancy test is positive, I didn't want a pregnancy. So we're faced with a huge medical problem, a big demand on the resources of the medical system, and maybe something that we could prevent if we could be more proactive and get the messages out. And this cartoon, I thought, was quite, you know, said an awful lot to me. Stop abortion, keep abortion legal. And the child saying, please teach me to make educated decisions and to take responsibility for my actions in life so I don't have to worry about this issue when I grow up. And isn't that really what we're interested as parents and as physicians in trying to enable and empower men and women, young men and women, to make good choices and good decisions? So in Canada, if you look at the number of sexual partners since sexual debut between 14 and 17 years of age, you can see it's around 3 for both men and women. And if you ask them specifically, are they engaging in casual sex, meaning this is an acquaintance and not necessarily somebody they're in a serious relationship, it's up to 40% of men and somewhere in the range of 30% for females. If you look at rates of chlamydia in Canada, these numbers, I'm sure, pale by comparison. I'll show you the U.S. numbers in just a second. But at the time we were looking at developing the program I'm going to tell you about tonight, what we saw was the rates. If you look at the rates of chlamydia, you can see on the right-hand side, they bottomed out in 1996, and they were starting to come back up again. So from 115 per 100,000 up to 179 per 100,000. And the same thing for gonorrhea. In 1996, they bottomed out at about 17 cases per 100,000, and they were starting to come up quite substantially. So we were sitting there faced with a dilemma as physicians saying, what are we doing wrong, or, you know, what can we do to better educate? And if you look at the U.S. rates, I found this data just yesterday from an STD surveillance document from the Center for Disease Control. There are 1.4 million new cases of chlamydia in the United States last year, which was an 8% increase over 2010. And 70% of those cases are in people under 24 years of age. So high-risk population. 320,000 cases of gonorrhea. Many of these are now resistant to the antibiotics we have. 4% increase in the past year in the United States, and 60% of these are in kids under age 24. What's alarming is this report went on to say, this is just the cases we know about, 60% of sexually active women did not get STI screening as they should have, according to the national recommendations. So these are just the cases we know about. Human papillomavirus, another lightning rod for debate. Now the vaccine has come along. Cancer-producing strains are associated with 99.7% of all cervical cancers. And the hope is that we can see elimination of cervical cancer in our lifetime. Pap smears are very costly screening programs with many false positives, and the vaccines really offer a promise to prevent this disease. But there's a large group of people afraid that if you give kids a vaccination saying they're not going to get wart virus, that's going to promote sex. And that's a worry that has continued. If you look at HIV cases in Canada, again, rising. Numbers are not huge yet, but overall 60,000 cases in Canada. And if you just arbitrarily 10 times the numbers for the United States, you're close. I don't know the exact number in the United States of America. So what about abstinence programs? We're going to talk about different types of sex ed programs. And there's a big push in the States, sex can wait. And there's you sign a virginity pledge, right? And this is quite interesting. They found that the rates of sexually transmitted infections in people that signed virginity pledges were exactly the same as they were in the rest of the population. So abstinence only works if you stay abstinent. The reality is that's not very common. Many reasons for unplanned pregnancy. I don't know whether you can read this, but this was a nice New Yorker cartoon. It says, since you ask, I had you, Samantha, because the birth rate was falling, and you, David, as revenge on society, and you, Mark, as a bid for lost youth, but you, Jason, were a mistake. And that's the problem we face with many unplanned pregnancies. So what are the obstacles to getting good, reliable information on sexual health? When we surveyed this large group of 14 to 17-year-old Canadians, 1,000 of them, many of them said they were embarrassed to go and ask. They were afraid to discuss it with their parents. There was no good source on the net. A lack of good information that was available, and they didn't have access to a nurse or doctor that they felt comfortable discussing it with. And when you ask them where they get their information, it's really quite funny. It's sad. The majority of them get their information from their friends, and their friends have the wrong information. So that's what propagates the misinformation out there. And you can see the parents are doing a so-so job. Schools are still the primary source of sex education. So if we don't have good sex education programs in our schools, we've got some deficits to deal with. So in Canada, they developed a very comprehensive sexual health education guideline outlining the principles of what should be a good sex education program. And this is just a real quick capsule picture, but basically what it said is you have to provide knowledge, information. You have to motivate people, and then you have to give them the behavioral skills to do it. It's called the IMB approach. I'd never heard of this when we started our project, and I'll tell you a little bit about that, and then have a conducive environment. So it should emphasize the self-worth and dignity of the individual, instill awareness of the impact of your behavior on others, reflect a balanced approach to sexual health enhancement and the prevention of negative outcomes, and deal with sexual health education as a lifelong process. Divorce rates 50%. What happens? 40-year-old woman re-enters the dating pool. She hasn't thought about contraception for 20 years. She doesn't know what's out there anymore. And there's a whole process. It's not just teenagers that need the information. It's at many, many different stages of life. So with such clear guidelines, why is there a problem? You know, the government's come out and said, here's what you need to do. Why don't we just bash ahead? Well, I like this cartoon. This is the committee to decide whether spawning should be taught in school. And the problem is there are a lot of parents that are fearful of sex education. And I'm going to address that as we go a little further into this. So how can we move ahead? We really need to embrace and bring into the discussion people with expertise. In 2000, our Royal College, that's a licensing body for specialists in Canada, came out with 7 defined roles for graduating physicians and specialists. It's not just to be a medical expert. You go to your doctor and he says, yeah, you've got endometriosis, big deal. He needs to be able to advocate for you. I can help you get your funding through this agency. He has to be a decision maker, he or she. They have to be a scholar, communicate well, right? You're no good having a doctor that can't talk to you or explain what your problem is. And a manager, it's a complicated business to run a medical practice nowadays. So I want to address the issue of health advocate, because this is really a prime example of where advocacy can have a significant benefit. And when we look at the need for advocacy and action, it's obvious that worthy projects primarily benefit society or certain groups within it. The broader the reach, or the more who may benefit, the greater the appeal or the scope, and the project may secondarily benefit other people. I was saying that doctors are faced as the interface with people demanding abortion or, you know, with unplanned pregnancies. And we can benefit, we can improve our situation by reducing the demand for this type of action. So the contraception awareness program provided a very unique opportunity. We had a substantial amount of funding come into our organization. And I was given a budget of about $1 million a year to say, what can we do to educate people on reproductive health and contraception in Canada? And being a physician who'd only done slides for medical students for 20 years, I said, why don't we make a slideshow up? And, of course, I've done that before. I've gone to schools and, you know, had parents and kids come in. And you do it five times, you get kind of fatigued, and then the slides go in the drawer. And I was very fortunate to have people on the committee. I had a behavioral psychologist. I had some public health people, people with a much broader type of interest than many obstetricians and gynecologists. And they came out with some very, very interesting ideas. First of all, they said, if we're going to get these sex education program that we develop into schools, we've got to watch out and let's not put lightning rods there that are going to make people say, no, we don't want that program. So we said we're going to build it on four pillars. And how can you argue against these, or three pillars, how can you argue against these? Women have the right to be free from unplanned pregnancy. They should have freedom from sexually transmitted infections. And they should have freedom from sexual coercion, abuse, or sexual dysfunctions. And those were the three pillars upon which we chose to develop our program. Now, if we look, we sat around, we had a number of meetings where we looked at what have other people tried. And I'm going to show you some examples. These are actually quite interesting to see how they do it. There have been school-based programs, sexual health visits by health professionals, nurses and doctors coming to the classroom, public health education campaigns, awareness days, government awareness weeks, media campaigns, public service announcements on the radio, lectures, TV shows. I'm going to show you some examples of these, brochures, public advertising. So how effective are these? So in our clinic, you can find dozens of pamphlets and brochures, and sometimes they're made up by companies that make a certain type of contraception. Sometimes they're from the hospital. People, while they're in the waiting room, they grab 10 of these, and they're all in the garbage as they leave, right? It's just something to entertain them while they're waiting to see the doctor. So it really doesn't get read or used. There have been some TV shows where they're very graphic, late at night. This was a famous Canadian, Sue Johansson, Sex with Sue, and she'd talk about anything. You phoned in. But they reach a very select audience, and usually the questions were about different types of kinky sex instead of, you know, really getting to the basis of sexual health. There's public awareness days that governments have held, and, you know, this May 3rd is going to be public reproductive health day, but, you know, who notices? Government campaigns, condom ad says, don't be shame, be game, protect yourself. These are signs I saw in the Caribbean, and stop AIDS. They've got a picture of condoms in different positions. Cops and rubbers in Thailand. Every time they'd stop somebody for a ticket, they'd give them some condoms to take with them. Okay? Not very effective. Swiss ad campaign, naked athletes, and it said, no action without protection. And this was in all the newspapers and magazines in Switzerland. This is a new one. I read about this today. Condomology. It's a program initiated this year by the American Social Health Association, ASHA, in the Research Triangle Park in North Carolina. And it's an educational program about making informed decisions and the facts about condoms, and you can access it at the Condomology website. Some of you may have seen this one. This made the news just in the past week. This was a New York City campaign where they put these posters up, and this shows this poor kid crying with tears in his eyes. I'm twice as likely not to graduate from high school because you had me as a teen. Well, this evoked a tremendous backlash from Planned Parenthood and other organizations saying, look, this does nothing to address the racial, economic, and social factors that lead to teen pregnancy. And what you're doing is you're stigmatizing kids born from teenage mothers, and you're stigmatizing teenage mothers. You haven't helped them at all. You're just making the situation worse. And this is still going on in New York City. You'll see these ads on posters. This was a program that I actually called up one of Percy's colleagues and got funded because I had three daughters. And when one of them was in grade 10 and one was in grade 9, I thought, this is a good time to take it to their school as a sex ed program. So my daughter looked at me when she heard we were doing this. She said, "Dad, if I see you on stage, I will shrivel up and die." So I said, "Okay, I will not go on stage." So what I did is I got residents in obstetrics and gynecology. And I got a couple of residents in urology, so they're just a few years older than the kids, maybe 10 years older. And we had touch pads for the whole audience. You can see the students are sitting here. He's a big klutzy. This is when touch pads were very new. And we would put up a question, how long is the male penis? And there were five choices, and they'd put in the answer. And then we'd say, it's time to have sex with your girlfriend when? And the choices would be there. And it would say, when you're in love, when you've been dating for 2 months, when you're horny. And, you know, we gave them all the choices. And, of course, we could see what the boys said and what the girls said. And it was quite interesting because we put up the answers and they came up right away in bar graphs. And, of course, when it's time to have sex, the girls are all going, when you're in love. And the guys are going, you know, when you're horny. And they'd look at each other going, geez, you know, we didn't think that's what was going on. It was quite educational. And then, of course, what happened, the residents would take the opportunity to educate and explain about whatever the question was. And we wrote this up as a research paper. But the problem with these kinds of programs, they're expensive to run. They take a lot of energy and effort. You do them once, and you get one group of kids, and then you're back to square one. So many of these things hadn't worked. And the behavioral psychologist who sat in our committees turned to me when I said, let's make a slideshow. He said, "Bob, it's time to stop the organ recital." You know what the organ recital is? This is the penis. This is the vagina. Don't put them together. That's the organ recital. That's what I got in high school for sex ed. Okay, and then the guy said, "Get the footballs. We're going outside to play football now." That was the end of the sex ed talk. So he said, "Get rid of the organ recital. We have to do IMB: information, motivation, behavior." And the goal was to take a totally new look at this, to work towards sexual and reproductive health by exploiting the unique characteristics of the internet. So anonymity, accessibility. There's very few places in the world you can't access a computer now. Expertise, interactivity, audiovisual richness. And so that was the impetus behind development of a website. I'm going to tell you a little bit about and some of the things we did to promote it. So it's in Canada, we're officially bilingual, so everything on this website is in English or in French at the Mass Sexuality site. So the campaign tactic was to create a brand and a visual identity. And we hired a professional marketing company to work with us, and they came out with some very good ideas. Build a website, a big database, tracking who was using it, number of hits, number of users. Publications in women's magazines, in cinema, on the buses, at the bus stops. In the movie theaters, when they show the trailers, there's ads for our website. All the university students attending first year university in Canada received a welcome package with information, condoms, and various other things that would lead them to go to the website. And we got a lot of third-party involvement. So we got the College of Family Physicians, Women's Federation, Pharmacists Association, and so on. So really trying to bring a lot of interest to the website. And the brand icon was, I thought, kind of clever. It was it's a computer mouse meant to kind of look like a sexual item you see with some protection over its head there. And there were a bunch of brand extensions, and I'll show you some of these in some of the videos that we used in just a minute. There was postcards that were given out, and the tagline that we used was "Your link to sexual well-being." So when people associated sexuality in you, it was a place where they could go and get reliable medical information. Now, on this website, there were five modules. You can see the colored squares at the top. There was a module for teens. There was a module for adults. This is the re-entry adult, the 40-year-old woman who hasn't thought about contraception. There's a module for parents. What should you be telling your kids? Do you have to have all the answers? And the answer to that one is no, you don't. And giving parents resources, where to direct their kids, and how to discuss a variety of different things with children. Teachers are in a very unique situation. this gave them the ammunition to go to the PTA or the board and say why sexual health education is important. It gave them projects for students to do on the web. And there's a wealth of resources there. And then there's an area for health professionals. I'm the health professional. What I did is I went to experts in a variety of different areas. Date rape drugs, male sexual dysfunction, female sexual dysfunction, am I gay? All sorts of different things. And these experts each wrote segments on the with the latest information to address these. So they're there for anybody. Now, if you wanted to, you could access the healthcare site and get all that information, even if you're not a healthcare professional. But it was trying to direct people to the most appropriate level of information. I'm just going to show you here some of the visual ads we had. So these ads were run on TV. You can see the different sites here. So teens on this one. One of the things we really tried to emphasize is dual protection, as this lady's discussing here. So dual protection meaning the breeches and suspenders approach, right? Condoms and birth control pills. Two methods to avoid sexually transmitted infection and pregnancy, or to have better protection from pregnancy. There's demonstrations of how to apply condoms, and a lot of visual richness on the website. And then behavioral scripts. I mean, one of the biggest problems, you can know that condoms are a good thing, and you can say, yeah, I'm going to try and remember to use them, and your boyfriend says, I don't have any infections, what are you worried about? Do you have an infection? And that embarrasses the young girl. So there's a whole series of behavioral scripts. What to say when somebody says that to you? And just to, and actually things that people can rehearse so that they're prepared to respond to those kinds of questions. Section for adults and covering all the different contraceptive methods in detail. Teachers, and you can see over here, making the case for the school-based sex health education. Myths and misconceptions about sexual health indicators for Canadian youth, tools for teachers. Sexuality and child development, reference sites, so a lot of reference material, frequently asked questions. Health professional site again, so female sexual dysfunction, male domestic violence, drug-facilitated sexual assault, STIs, how to choose the right contraceptive method, contraception and disability and illness, sexuality and child development, sexuality in older women and their partners and resources. So covered a broad range of information from experts. And the other thing that was put on there is what we've termed, or what was termed by one of our experts, is bibliotherapy. You know, nobody has all the answers. And as a physician in my practice, I see people, they'll come in and their problem will be pain or something, and we'll talk about that. And right at the very end of the discussion, I'm getting up, I just got my hand on the doorknob, and the lady says, oh, by the way, I've never had an orgasm. What is that? Well, that's a little awkward, right? How do you address that? And I say, well, give me your email address, and I'm going to send you three books that you can read, and that's your homework, and then you come back and we'll talk about it. And bibliotherapy is a great way for busy physicians, busy nurse practitioners, to give people some resources to do some reading on their own, and people are very good about doing that nowadays. So which modules are getting the greatest use? As you might expect, teens account for almost 50% of the people attending this, but you can see the adult group is about 36%, and lesser numbers of parents, teachers, and health professionals in terms of actual total numbers, but it probably reflects substantial numbers within those groups. And we had a variety of promotional items and activities. So we gave away mouse pads that had the website address on it. These little rulers were given out to everybody in first year university, and flavored condoms and T-shirts and a whole variety of things. And ads on the buses and subway systems throughout the major cities in Canada. There are two very good resource books that were produced by the SOGC. One is called Sex Sense. And it talks all about different contraceptive methods, the pros and cons. And we gave these away. We gave away 300,000 of them to physicians and nurses and pharmacists. And we kept running out of print copies of these because they were in such demand. and then choosing a contraceptive that's right for you. It's a flip chart for physicians to have on their desk, and it addresses pros and cons of each of the different methods. The campus ad campaign, there were ads on the inside of the bathroom stalls. One positive test result you could do without. Posters in the men's washrooms and so on. And you're going to say, well, why are you telling us about all this advertising? I want to show you how that drives people to a website and the impact that has, because there's no point investing the energy and the money in developing a website if nobody goes there. And websites have to be interesting, they have to continually be refreshed, and I'll tell you about some of the new things that are going on at the present time. So we did a lot of advertising on TV and public service announcements, and I'll just show you a couple of these examples. One of the things that we were able to do with this big budget is we invested in a race car driver. Who would have thought of that for a sexual health website? And this was called the Safe Sex Car. This person, so you can see the little computer mice on the side of his car there and the Sexuality and You website. And there was a pink car in the same racing series that the announcers called the Barbie car. And I was at one of the races to see this guy perform, Chris Guerrari. He actually won the whole series for the year of this race car level. And the announcer was going, and the safe sex car is catching the Barbie car. It was quite entertaining to be there. So we used Chris. We paid him $80,000. I think it helped buy new tires for his vehicle. And he did a promotional video for us, as well as having this on his car all year long. Oops, sorry. We used a variety of different magazines in Canada and broadcast advertising on a lot of the music channels, Much Music and Chum Radio and so on. Web advertising. Web broadcasting is quite an interesting area. Have anybody tried to get an ad on Google? Anybody in the room done that before? Well, you only get on the first page of Google if you have hundreds of thousands of hits or you pay an amount of money. And so if you want to get your name to pop up first when somebody searches, it's some real challenges to do that. And we eventually got ourselves onto the front page of Google because of the number of hits we were getting on our website. This was an ad that was put on screens in Toronto, Montreal, and Vancouver on huge screens around Christmas time. People are out shopping. And this would come up, and while there's some music to it, it didn't require that there was any sound because the... everything was written on it. And this is the one that appeared. My kids were a little surprised when this came up when we went to a show together.
So what do you
So this website in 2001 received an international award for best in category for health from over 700 entries, and in 2002 got an award of merit from what's called RSVP Marketing for small operations with budgets just under $1 million. And it, as James mentioned, we were surprised actually to be notified by the United Nations that we'd received an award. I'm going to show you a couple of videos from this, but basically in 2005, judges met from around the world looking at programs, educational programs. They looked at over 1,000 pre-selected entries, and I had the opportunity to fly to Tunisia for the World Summit Gala in November of 2005 to receive the award on behalf of the Society of Obstetricians and Gynecologists of Canada. And this was what was called the World Summit for the Information Society. And Kofi Annan, as you can see in the one picture there, is promoting a computer that you run by cranking. Didn't require any electricity. And they were going to make these available for $100 a computer. There was some company that was going to make these available to the developing world. And this whole conference was on getting access to what they call the information divide. And this is... you might recognize the guy in the brown suit among the others, but this is, was receiving the award. And I'm just going to show you a video they showed at the time of the award, which describes what they were trying to accomplish.
Technology has produced the information age. Now it is up to all of us to build an information society, says Kofi Annan, UN Secretary General. New gadgets come on the market every month for consumers of the developing world, but many people still do not have access to basic computers, the internet, or even telephones. This is the digital divide, which is widening continuously. Information technology allows us to produce interactive digital contents. Interactivity is a cultural revolution, and it is a key creative challenge. Technologies of information and communication develop faster than humans can create contents. This is the content gap. It is becoming bigger every day. The World Summit Award narrows the digital divide. All people have the right to quality contents. With the participation from 168 countries in 2005, the World Summit Award creates awareness and promotes the best for all to see and all to use. The World Summit Award bridges the content gap. 40 winners in 8 categories demonstrate the richness and diversity of interactive contents from around the world. E-government and e-health, e-learning and e-entertainment, e-culture and e-business, e-science and e-inclusion, these contents belong to us and to our world. E-content that is rich and varied improves all aspects of our lives. The United Nations World Summit on the Information Society started the World Summit Award. In roadshows, the world's best contents are going around the globe to be showcased and to inspire creative producers and national content industries everywhere. A global information society enables all people to create and share knowledge. The World Summit Award demonstrates how new media can be used to create a better world. Society of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, Canada. Family planning needs help. www.sexualityandyou.ca offers credible, comprehensive information on contraception and sexual health issues. The content is excellently focused on the specific interests and points of view of teens, parents, adults, teachers, and healthcare workers. Interactive games, quizzes, and general knowledge tests are used to illustrate, to promote safety, and to increase responsible behavior. Users are pleased with ease of use, navigability, and a clean interface demonstrating the multiple advantages of interactive multimedia contents.
So, subsequent to this, there was a lot of publicity about the website, which drew more people to it. And one of the things we learned from the computer experts is you got to refresh your website every couple of years. So in 2006, it underwent a total new look. And we developed a fellowship program in contraception and reproductive health at the university, and we have graduate obstetricians come and spend 1 or 2 years with us. And they have worked very intensively on this website, answering, developing frequently asked question responses for people, and putting out a monthly newsletter, which is on the website. So people sign up for it, and they get this monthly update on the latest developments. So here's an example of one of the monthly newsletters. It's something about safe sex for travelers to the south in the wintertime. And they mentioned the sex view challenge. We wanted to appeal to an age group of kids that was, you know, in the range of 12 to 14. We put on this interactive game where they're doing karate fighting and they stop and they ask a question. If you get the right answer, your guy keeps chopping. And we had 100,000 more visitors a month after this was put on the website from kids wanting to play this game. And these are just showing in 2002, as the advertising increases, you see the number of visitors starts to go up. And you can see there in mid-2006 at the time of this award, it was approaching 300,000 visitors a month. If you look at the actual web traffic, because the reports are very detailed, and I didn't really understand this very well, a hit means one click of the mouse. So you could be on a website and click six times. That's six hits. So there were actually 2.5 million sessions, 1.46 million unique visitors, 12.3 million pages viewed, more than 100 million hits. So that means people are clicking around the site. Now, what was interesting, people could have been looking for sex, right? You type in the word sex and this could come up. What's interesting is people stayed on it. So if we're even driving people that are looking for a porn site, if they're spending 6 minutes looking at how to put a condom on, maybe we're having some benefit. I don't know. So the average length of time was 6 minutes and 5 page views. So I'm close to concluding here. There was a subsequent award for advocacy for women's health on the web presented by a Maryland-based Health Improvement Institute. And all of these to say that it is having some effect. Now, this was a promotion that we put out just before the Olympics in Vancouver. Here's some information I'll bet you didn't know. Condom distribution became something that the organizers took as a responsibility starting in Barcelona in 1992. In Beijing, they gave out 100,000 condoms to 17,000 athletes, and the condoms had written on them the Olympic motto, faster, higher, stronger. I thought that was kind of interesting. The U.S. men's curling team has its own condom. And if people buy it in support of the U.S. curling team, it says, hurry hard. You know the expression they yell when they want you to sweep harder? The money goes to AIDS research. And in Vancouver, they gave out 100,000 condoms, and they had to go back and get 20,000 more for 17,000 athletes. That's 16 per person. You wonder how they have the energy after the races, eh? So just to conclude, the Doctors Without Border title was really to try and demonstrate that with adequate promotion and high-quality resources on an internet website, you can offer information to people from all over the world where this information is often suppressed or not available. And what's interesting now is we know that a large part of our web traffic originates in developing countries. So if you get 300,000 visitors, probably 50,000 are from Canada. Now, one thing that we haven't been able to sort out is they go through nodes. We wondered why Raleigh, North Carolina had so many people interested in masturbation and stuff. And that was an AOL node, America Online node, where it was coming in from all over the world to that one site. And we were only able to track it through the web traffic back to the most proximate node. What are we doing in the future? We're at the process right now of going to a mobile interface with a web app. And that's really a challenge because that's an expensive process. And this is the website. There's Facebook and Twitter. There are people now that send out tweets every day about some sexual health message for people that sign up. But it's expensive to maintain these, and our budget is now something in the range of $100,000 a year instead of $1 million. So I just wanted to conclude with a thank you to you for coming out. I know it's late in the day and appreciate your attention. I want to thank Percy and James Edmondson for inviting me, and all the people who've contributed to, there's a lot of work has gone into this successful site. Thank you very much.